Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. I'm so glad you're with us wherever you are. So many of you are joining us here in Santa Barbara, California, where we're sitting at TVSB. We're grateful for you, and so many of you are finding us from all over the world at goodlifetelevision.org, at our YouTube channel, and all these social media pages. And there's also a podcast that has really taken off over the last year called Good Life Conversations. So if you're a podcast kind of a person, you can listen while you work out or whatever it is you do, drive. I'd love to have you join us there. But there's just amazing people. All walks of life. We've been really blessed to just have some amazing little meetings on this couch over these last few years. And I just think you'll be encouraged. You know, this world, we're not looking for negative content typically on the internet, but you kind of have to look for good stuff. And so that's what we're trying to do. You know, there's that old saying, you can curse the darkness or you can light a candle. And so we're trying to light a candle here. And we've got a lot of candle lighters we've been bringing on, one after the other, entrepreneurs, business people, public servants, young people, old people, people who've been through immense suffering in their life, but have overcome. It's been really a blessing. So I think you'll love it. And if you go to the YouTube channel, you can subscribe, obviously, but there's all the long form interviews are there. And then we break them up into what we call power clips, some of the great moments from those interviews. So we're grateful to be here. Grateful for our friends at Bunnen Chevrolet, Leo Bunnen and Brian Bunnen, for their support and bringing us to you. And we're grateful for our team. And I'm really excited about my guest today. You're going to really be encouraged by this time, I think. Catherine Norland is with me. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Dean.
Yeah, we really didn't coordinate on the blues. It just happened. So, you know, we'll take it. So Catherine is an award-winning actress. She's you may have seen her. She's written books we're going to talk about. She's doing some life coaching, and she's a speaker. She's a budding speaker. We were just talking about that off air, and I think you're going to see her out there with this incredible message that she has. The latest book that we're also going to be talking about launches May 8th, and it's called You Are Worthy, and you are. So let's start with your life, kind of, and kind of go back to where you came from, and kind of tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I grew up in a trailer court in a small little town of 9,000 amongst the cornfields of Minnesota.
Oh.
And my dad was a house painter, and my mom was a nurse. And, you know, I did not do well in school. School was not really my thing.
I'm with you on that.
But I found a lot of joy when I would do, like, the high school talent shows.
Yeah.
And I found that was, like, the one place where I felt like I could shine, where I, you know, would make a difference, where I was winning all these awards, because it certainly academics was not for me.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when I graduated and all my friends were picking their colleges, and I, that didn't seem like my train. I had a couple of friends that were going to go to the local university just like 10 miles away from where we lived, and I applied to get in, and they did not accept me, and I had this inferior, I guess, this complex,
yeah,
most of my life, especially starting in high school, that I wasn't worthy. And two of my friends that got in were special needs. And I'm thinking to myself, my special
right.
needs friends got into this college and
right.
I couldn't. Like, what is wrong with me?
Right.
I already thought that I was ugly and fat and ugly, just disgusting, that no one would want to be my friend. And now I'm stupid too. And so I had all this stuff working against me, and I didn't think I could go after my dreams or goals because I felt like nothing is working out for me. I have nothing to offer. So
wow.
I had to have a real shift and reframe in my mind to even move to LA and pursue acting and to do all these things, because I just thought I got nothing to offer the world.
Wow. And so you land in LA.
Yeah.
Hollywood, a little different than 9,000 people in Minnesota.
Yes, here I come with this, such a self-hatred of myself that I literally, and I talk about this in my book, could not even look in the mirror without crying. I
wow.
thought I was that hideous. And now I'm surrounded by all the most beautiful people in the world who were all told, you should move to LA and be a model or an actor. So I'd be sitting in these rooms with all, already feeling like I don't measure up. And then I'm surrounded by these gorgeous models and actors. And I'm like, what am I doing here? I do not belong here. So it was a huge, huge thing to overcome.
Wow. How old were you when you came?
25.
25.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, that's a tough scene to break into.
Yes.
How did that work?
You know, a lot of getting used to the no's, a lot of getting used to the rejection.
Yeah.
And I think we all innately have a fear of rejection,
right,
of not being liked, of not being enough.
Yeah.
But when you're told over and over and over, you're too this or you're too that, like me being told you're too pale, you're too ugly, you're too fat, you're too pretty, you're too, it was all over them. You're too short, you're too tall. It was like, what boxes do I
right.
need to check this time? And how, you know, and feeling like you already didn't measure up, and then rejection, rejection, rejection. It took me quite a while to be able, and I talk about this in the You Are Worthy book, to separate who I was from the earth suit I lived in.
Yeah.
And realize these rejections from the casting directors, directors, producers wasn't about me. It doesn't mean I am terrible and I just need to pack up and move home. It just means once I was able to separate who I am from what they were looking for, it's just like actors are seen as products. And if people can't look at you and go, oh, I know, that's the ditzy blonde or that's the sleazy salesman. If they can't say who you are right away, you're less likely to get the job because it's about checking things off the list and filling in the box. So I was able to go, okay, it's not my, if I'm a ketchup bottle, maybe they want the old fashioned glass one.
Right.
And I'm the futuristic one with the label upside down and the wider bottle.
Right, 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 right.
So separating myself from who I am and who they thought I was became freeing. And I realized, you know what? It's not about me. It's not that I'm not talented. It's not that I'm not enough. It's just that my outer shell is not appropriate for the story that they're trying to tell. Maybe they want a two-story home or a skinny house, but if they needed a like white double-wide trailer, I'm your girl. So it was just finding, you know, where do I fit? And that
wow.
it's not disparaging about me. It's just I don't tell the story visually that they want to tell. And
right.
that gave me a lot of freedom to go out and keep going after it and not feeling like I didn't measure up anymore. It's just I didn't plug into that story.
And so you stuck with it.
I stuck with it 20 some years now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Malcolm in the Middle, right? Is that
Yeah, I was on an episode of Malcolm in the Middle. I was on a couple shows on BET, a couple episodes. Most of my career has been little independent films that maybe not very many people have seen. So it wasn't until I, about 4.5 years ago, booked a role on Darman
right.
that it just blew up
billions
so much.
Of views.
Billy, he's had over 40 billion views on his content. So it's weird because you do things that are more recognizable and not many people know you, but then you start out doing this thing that you think, oh, this is just a little YouTube show. Who's
yeah.
going to see this?
Yeah.
And I took my mom on a cruise for her 80th birthday, and people from all over the world were coming up to me and just saying, oh, I love your work on this show. And I thought, wow, like
wow.
who would have thought, like
yeah.
in my mind, this little YouTube show
yeah.
would become a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's in multiple languages. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, so you just never know what's going to
yeah.
be the thing.
Right. So tell us about your faith journey.
Uh-huh.
Where did that start?
Mm-hmm. Well, my parents raised me in a faith-filled home. They actually met in Bible school. My dad was a recruiter, and he recruited my mom into, I think it was Golden Valley Lutheran College or something like that. And they met there. So I grew up, you know, there'd be a bus that would come to my trailer court and pick up all the kids and take us up to church. And I was age 9, I gave my life to God. But then I became a teenager, and I just
right.
wasn't having it. I wasn't fitting in with that.
Right.
That wasn't my vibe. And like, I ran from God. I didn't, I was, maybe running with a bad crowd, doing things that are, let's say we broke the law in more ways than one.
Right.
And, but there came a point where it was just so empty and shallow, and
yeah.
I was just drinking alcohol and trying to bury my feelings of self-hatred, and I just came to a breaking point, and
wow.
I was working at a donut shop, and there was that old man that used to pick us up on the bus and take us to church. He came into my donut shop and he's like, "You really need to go to this women's retreat." And I was like, "I'm not going to that women's retreat at church." And then my parents convinced me to go to church with them again one week, and I had somebody else come up to me, "You really need to go to this women's retreat." I'm like, I don't have money for that women's retreat. And then a third person came up to me, "You really need to go to that women's retreat, and I've purchased your ticket."
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, okay." And something happened at that women's retreat, and I saw the passion of some of these people there and the singers, and they were so connected with God, and the Holy Spirit's moving through them, and they're in tears, and they're speaking some kind of weird language, and I was like,
right.
I don't know what this weird stuff is going on, but I, so it just turned out that I didn't have a ride home, because I didn't have a car, so my old Sunday school teacher gave me a ride home, and so on the way home, she's like trying to witness to me, and I was like, "Yeah, whatever," and so I asked her, I was like, "What? So what's this lady? She's singing, she's crying all the time, she's saying stuff, I don't know what she's saying," and she's telling me about, like, this Holy Spirit language or something, and we get to my little apartment, and she finally, like, is asking me, "Do you want that? Do you, is that so?" I'm like, "Oh, I don't know, like, what's the point of it?" And so she's trying to talk me into this, and she prays for me, and something comes over me, and it was, I don't even know how to describe it, but it was like all the anger, all the bitterness just broke off me, and I was sobbing. I guess you could say that was like the Holy Spirit had come upon me. I'm sobbing, and I felt so light. I felt like I was floating. It was like I was walking on clouds, and what it felt like, Dean, is that whatever blindfold I had on had broken off me, mm-hmm. and I could finally see for the first time. I was 22 years old. I was working at a bar at that point, waitressing, you know, serving drinks, and it was like a switch went off. I've never had a drop of alcohol since that day. I quit that day. I was supposed to go to work. I called my job. I quit. I came forward that next Sunday in church and gave my life to God, gave my testimony, and I just became a completely different person just in that one moment.
Oh my goodness. 22.
At 22.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then let's fast forward a little bit.
Yeah.
I told you before we came on, we have this in common. We have special needs kids.
Yeah.
You had two preemie boys, right?
Uh-huh.
We have a special needs daughter. What has that journey been like for you and your husband?
Ooh, that was really scary, really, at first. It was, that's the greatest test of faith, I feel like.
Yeah.
And growing in your compassion, growing in your ability, level of patience, really, like, the whole journey in the NICU, that was like 4 months. My first child was in the NICU, 118 days. My second one was in the neonatal intensive care unit, 39 days. But not knowing from day to day if your child was going to live or die, and have, like, people trying to prepare you for the worst. The doctor,
yeah.
He's got a 90% chance of dying. You know, doctors and nurses and therapists telling me he's never going to walk, he's never going to talk. Close friends and mentors saying, "You know, you should really pull the plug. You're going to have to take care of him the rest of his life. You're going to have all these issues," and just not, it's like I had no support system in it. My parents were in Minnesota, here I am in Thousand Oaks, California, and the people around me kind of would criticize me and tell me I'm doing something wrong, and if you would have done this, he wouldn't have been premature. If you wouldn't have done that. So like these accusations pointed at me everywhere, like it's my fault. And then this terrible journey of like, what's the one thing you can do? If you can't do anything, they're in an incubator. You're not allowed to touch them. You're just looking at them, helpless, trying to pray. Like I was trying to read the Bible over them, and the nurses, don't talk out loud. He needs quiet. And like everything I thought I could try to do to help him, I couldn't. I was like, you know, I'm reading all these studies about how breast milk is the best thing you could do for your child. And then I wasn't able to produce any. And the people close to me in my life telling me, well, if you cared about your child, you'd be able to produce milk. I'm in my room sobbing, thinking I must not love him enough or it would come. And, you know, it was a very lonely, lonely time.
Wow.
And when others don't see, don't have the faith that you have, and they're telling you, just, you know, just jump out of this, just pull the plug, make your life easy. And you're going against the grain to make it.
Right.
Like, no.
Right.
I believe that this is for a reason, and it's ordained. And you know what? He's walking and talking now. So he's defied the odds in so many ways.
Wow. How old is he?
He's 15 now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. My littlest one is 4. And my littlest one has also been diagnosed with autism. Not as extensive of things as my older child has going on. But, you know, it's
That's
easy
amazing.
To sometimes blame yourself for things that are out of your control. And that's like a whole nother journey to
right.
overcome.
Well, yeah, the messages. That's one of the things I love about what you're doing. So we have several of the books here, but I want to specifically focus on Catherine's new book, which is You Are Worthy.
Yeah.
But that's, before I transition, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, and walking that out over time is not an easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have such admiration for parents with special needs kids.
Mm-hmm.
It is a journey.
Yeah.
Journey.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, yeah, I could talk about that the whole show.
Right.
So I'll stop. But
yes.
We admire you and your husband for walking that out.
Thank you.
It's not an easy thing.
Thank you, Dean.
But let's talk about this book. Because that, when you were talking about the messages we get, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about that all the time. What are you hearing? We're doing employee reviews at our foundation yesterday and the day before, and I was sitting in one with a young man, and I was saying, I don't know what you're hearing, but I want to tell you something. You have what it takes.
Yeah.
Okay? That's God.
Yeah.
You've got what it takes. He made you. But the messages that we can so often hear and believe are... There's an enemy that's real, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wants to, and he's feeding, you know, chirping in your ear about,
all day long.
All day
long. And he's using those around
sometimes,
you that you love.
That's why we got to be very careful who we walk with, because man, do we need people? We need the voice of God, you know.
Yeah.
A pastor that I follow said this a few months ago. He said, "I can't afford to have a thought in my head that's not from God.
No.
I just can't. I don't have." Which I think is so true.
Yeah.
But the world is screaming.
Ugh.
I mean, and that's one of the things, reasons we're here. We want to be a voice in a place where people are hearing something different.
The world is screaming and God is whispering.
And
so
God's whispering.
Hearing that
that's right.
still small voice to know your direction when everyone's screaming at you to do the opposite is...
Right.
That's a test.
So what is this about? If you had to...
Yes.
Summarize it.
So You Are Worthy is it's a journey I went on to find my worth when I, like I said, I couldn't even look in the mirror. I just hated myself so much. Discovering my value, and I did that by finding out what the scriptures had to say about me.
Yes.
By finding that journey of you are fearfully and wonderfully made. You were made for such a time as this. And it teaches people how to really stop sabotaging their dreams and building someone else's future because you don't think you have what it takes.
Right.
You don't think you have enough, that you are not worthy. And being able to step into your calling and live your purpose with confidence, knowing you deserve it just as much as anyone else, that you belong to be here just as much as anyone else. And
and
really finding out what God has to say about you and that you can do anything any dream or desire God's put in your heart, you are well able to achieve and to excel at, because the one living inside you gives you that power. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. And I just feel like if every believer actually knew their worth and believed they were deserving of it, this world would be a better place.
That's
because
right.
How many believers do we know God has put this dream in their heart, but they're like, well, I don't have what it takes. Well, I'm not enough. Well, I'm not this, or I'm not that, or I'm not good enough. And God didn't call you to be any of those things. He called you to trust Him to take you to that place. It's not by our power, not by might, but by my spirit, says the Lord. So sometimes, and here's what I found out, you know, when I would compare myself to all the most gorgeous, smart, affluent people out there, sometimes people look at them and they think what they've accomplished in their life is due to their status, their privilege, their ranking, or whatever. But sometimes those of us who have the most cracks in our jars of clay, that is even better, because then people look at us and go, wow, well, if that person could do it, then I could do it, you know. And those cracks, those faults and weaknesses is what allows God to shine through us. And when I didn't think I was smart, when I didn't think I didn't have what it took, I would find scriptures that said, you know, let the weak say I am strong.
Right.
You know, we have to call those things that we want to have. And the scriptures that would tell us, I have used the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be a fool anyway, I'm going to be God's fool. And then He can use me. I can do things that would astound people. Oh, you don't have a college degree, or you don't have this or this. And I'm going out and doing things that people are like, wow, how did you get the guts to do that? And it's by the leading of the Holy Spirit, letting God open the doors for me that I couldn't open.
Let God do the work.
We don't have to do it all. We don't have to be anywhere. Like that famous quote, God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called.
That's right.
So all we have to do is say, here I am, Lord.
I'm in.
Here I am.
I'm in. Yes.
Use me.
Yep.
And see what happens.
Yeah. And Paul actually said, if I boast, I boast in my weaknesses, which I thought that's an amazing thing.
You know?
And this is something actually our special needs daughter has really taught us. She's so comfortable with who she is. Like, if I'll say to her, man, she does this walking program right in that room over there. Every day she's learning to walk under this ladder. And at the end of the day, she's always proud of herself. And she'll call me and she'll say, Dad, I'm just so proud of all my accomplishments. And I said, boy, you're just doing an amazing job. She says, I know. I know I am. Like, there's no arrogance about it. It's like, she's very, very comfortable with, like, and I'm like, like, there's this just purity. But that is, if we believe, what a powerful point you make. If we believe those promises, that is life changing. If you think about that, I mean, if we actually think this is true, if we walk around like it's true, I am the beloved. He has a future and a hope. He knows every day. Like, sometimes we worry, oh, when am I going to die? I don't know. But he knows. He's already there. Like, what if we walked in that kind of freedom? Like, let's do.
And then that we're already a winner, because he has, you know, he knows the end from the beginning. He knows that we're going to be victors. So we can't go into something thinking we're going to fail. We need to go into our endeavors knowing we're going to win. We're going to learn. We're going to adjust if we need to. But we can't not start just because maybe we might fail along the way. You know?
Fear is a big enemy, isn't it?
And it's not even necessarily a real, legitimate fear. A lot of it comes down to, what will people think of me? When really, what is God going to think of you when you stand before Him one day and you didn't do that thing He made you for? He put you on earth to accomplish this thing, to make a difference in people's lives. And you were like, but what if they laugh at me? You can't stand before God one day and say, well, I didn't want someone to, like, put me down. Who cares? And you're so right about our special needs children teaching us, because when people would give me a compliment, oh, no, not me. Well, this old thing, or this excuse, or this old thing, or you know, putting ourselves down. And my son's the same way. Timmy, you're great. You're awesome. I know.
It's refreshing.
Has anyone ever given you a compliment and you were like, I know?
It's
like
so
never.
Refreshing.
We feel like we have to be a doormat, and that's not what the Bible's talking about when it's talking about humility.
Right.
So when it tells us not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought, it doesn't mean we're becoming a doormat.
Right.
We're not going to be better than people, or it doesn't mean we're going to be lower than people.
Right.
We have to see ourselves on equal ground as
true.
The president of the United States or the homeless guy. We're we're all on equal
Wherever
ground with the
you.
Same value.
So good.
So that's all the things I talk about in the You Are Worthy book.
I love it. You Are Worthy. Catherine Norland is the author, and this will be out in less than a month.
Yes.
You know, and Catherine's doing speaking. She'll be in Atlanta.
Yes, I'm going to be speaking at the You Are Worthy Summit in Atlanta in June, the end of June.
Fantastic. So if you have a women's group or in your church or something, this is a message that I think people would love. I love your, when I was looking at your, some of your information, I mean, you have kind of these three little taglines: live true, love hard, and shine bright.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for you? Like when you think about, when you get up in the morning, how does this thinking kind of impact your week?
So if I'm living true to who I am and who God's created me to be and the things that He's put inside me to do, I have to do that and not necessarily what others expect me to do. So I had this really great mentor. But what I didn't know at the time is he was trying to mold me to become what he wanted me to be, what he wanted me to live, kind of his dreams that he had. So one of my passions is poetry. I've written three faith-based poetry books, and I tend to write quirky, motivational poetry with a punch for Jesus freaks, spiritual snobs, believers bustling to be better, and hypocrites hankering to be holy. So it's really a passion of mine. They're kind of like self-help poetries, but they're fun. And he would tell me, you know, poetry is never going to become anything. You're not going to make money off it. You really need to become a director. And he was kind of grooming me to become a director and filmmaker kind of stuff, because he thought, you're too old to be an actor. And so he was this brilliant man, the third best Shakespeare teacher in the world. And he was just, and I just believed him. And so him like telling me, don't do this poetry. And so I would help him with stuff each day. And he'd be like, where were you this morning? And I started like having to keep it a secret that I was like working on a poem for 3 hours, because he would tell me I was wasting my time. So I wasn't living true.
Right.
I wasn't living true. The love hard is sometimes the difficulties it is to love people who are putting you down, to give that cup of cold water to that person that's hurt you. So recently there was a bit of a protest at the place I work, because a few actors weren't happy with their contract or whatever. But it turned into like this hateful smear campaign, kind of the stuff coming. And the loving hard. I had so many things that the flesh side of me wanted to say to like call them out. You think you're airing his dirty laundry? Oh, I'm going to air your dirty laundry. But it was like just loving hard in a way where I'm not going to speak anything disparaging of you just because you're doing that to someone I care about. It's kind of was like not sinking to that person's level. Love hard can mean so many different things, but it's loving in the times when it's hard.
Yes.
And shining bright, what can you do to every room you walk in? What are you bringing into that room? Yeah. How are you shining? It's easy for a lot of people to try to preach this and preach that, but what are they seeing? What are you displaying? And I remember seeing a pastor once, and he said, you know, a light bulb doesn't go around saying, I'm a light, I'm a light, I'm a light. It just shines.
Yeah.
So we don't need to go around saying, oh, I'm a Christian, or I'm this, or I'm that. Especially if how we act isn't matching up with that.
Right.
We just need to shine. We just need to show the love of God everywhere we go. And, you know, we're not perfect.
Right.
But we do the best we can to bring that light into the darkness, like you mentioned, lighting that candle.
Yeah.
Maybe my candle on some days is pretty dim.
Right.
But it's that striving to be that light. How would Jesus handle this situation is what I try to do. And I try not to let my emotions get the best of me, but I'm a work in progress.
Yeah, right. So from a 9,000 person town in Minnesota to Hollywood, and you're writing books. This is quite a journey.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I am not the person I was even 5 years ago. So it's constantly renewing my mind, putting in the God stuff, what He has to say about me and what He thinks about me. And
yeah,
it's been quite the journey. And that's what I wanted to share in my You Are Worthy book. How did I get from someone who was so shy, I could not even order pizza over the telephone, like sending my mom to the dry cleaners for me because I was so scared of confrontation. I couldn't even tell the dry cleaner they missed some spots on my dress and needed to redo it.
Wow.
Like, I could not speak up for myself at all to, you know, being this somewhat public figure,
right,
a micro celebrity on some levels,
right,
that, you know, I'm out there, I'm getting the hate from people, and I'm just soaking it in. Like, okay, well, I must be ruffling some feathers, which is okay. If they hate you, they hated me first, right?
It's so good. and a fearlessness that can come, you know. I really believe that's what we need. And, you know, young women today are in such a bind because of especially if you're in the social media world.
Yes.
The comparison,
yes,
the hatred, the bitterness, the like, it's tough out there.
It is.
This wasn't the case when I was growing up.
No.
Like, we didn't
have social media when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, and so I think like something like this.
I talk about that and I have a couple chapters, like, it's better to be holy than hot. And I have different scenarios where I talk about the social media and how to handle it. And
yeah.
It's
right.
All really relevant topics that we are facing, and how do you deal with it?
And that's the funny thing about, like, our special needs daughter I mentioned. She doesn't compare herself to anybody ever.
Yeah.
Never. She's 21. I've never heard her one time say, well, this, but never.
Mm.
She's running her race, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think, man, that is such a lesson to hear the right voice, to pay attention to that,
yes,
to the truth. And then to run your race.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to tell this to my boys all the time. Last night I said this. You know, my boy comes home from baseball practice and he's got something he's bothering him. I said, man, you got to be, you do you.
Yeah.
You run your race.
Yeah.
Let that all play out. It all comes out in the wash.
That's
my favorite saying. You do you, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're hearing from God and you know who you are, like our precious special needs kids,
yeah,
you don't spend a lot of time looking over the fence.
They don't compare themselves.
You know? It's such a freeing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, your next book needs to be about special needs mom.
I have been working on.
I've been working on
a memoir about the time I've been working on a couple, the time in the NICU, and then I started writing a book called The Long Ride on the Short Bus. It's a journey.
Yeah.
And I know it's a tongue-in-cheek title, but if you do not find humor in the tough situations that you're going through, it can just feel heavy and so overwhelming that you just, you know, and people around you who do not understand what it's like, they give you this crazy advice and they think they're uplifting you and they're really just making you feel worse.
Yeah, we have to laugh.
Yes, you
God
have to
invented
laugh.
Laughter, by the way.
Thank goodness. The
I
best
always
medicine.
Remember that. God laughs.
Yeah.
I don't think we think about that enough. God laughs.
Oh, yeah.
He created laughter. What a great gift, you know.
For
all right,
sure.
We could talk all day, but we're out of time. I love this.
Can I give a special free offer to your people watching?
Yes, please.
So the You Are book, You Are Worthy book, I also created a course called You Are Worthy.
Okay.
And I want to give away three videos from that. So if you just go to Catherine Norland, free gift from Coach Cat, that'll be the best website. Free gift from Coach Cat, and you will get three different lessons out of this book that I made videos on.
Great.
So free gift
free
from Coach Cat.
Dot com. Coach Cat, KAT.
Yes.
.com. Catherine Norland.com is her full name with a K, Catherine, Norland.com. Go check it out. Bring her to your women's, bring her to your young women's group especially.
Yeah.
They need this. We need this.
Yeah.
I love talking to you.
Thank you so much, Dean.
Thanks for coming.
It's an honor and a privilege.
Yeah. What a blessing. Thank you very much. Catherine Norland, everybody. Wonderful. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.